Welcome to Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. Utah Foundation has invited candidates of the 2nd Congressional District special election to speak with Thomas Young. In these interviews, Thomas will ask the same 6 questions relating to how these candidates hope to address the issues most important to Utah voters.
Thanks for being with us, Senator Reedy. How's life?
Life is busy. It's great. I'm excited to have this fantastic opportunity to run and also to speak with you guys. So thank you.
Among other things, some voters in early 2020 were up in arms about the state legislature making changes to the ballot initiatives from a couple years before. That wouldn't specifically affect you in Congress, but should you be concerned about whether voters think that you listen to them?
I am concerned that people don't think we're listening to them very much. It bothers me tremendously. I supported those initiatives, and I do understand that there were some unintended consequences to the language in the initiatives, but I don't think that we fulfilled the intent of the initiatives by the changes we had made in the legislature. I do think that we're not listening to the people. As a minority person, a minority leader in the state, it is hard. And I do see how sometimes the system is used to manipulate the process so that it doesn't get a hearing. And so these are some things too. When you watched some of those hearings about that initiative, a lot of people came and spoke in favor, and yet we still did the opposite of what they asked us to do. So I am a little bit up in arms about some of the behavior that our legislative does. And I think that there's room to grow, and we should be listening to them. And, for us to preemptively take away some of the things that they've asked us for is wrong. And we could actually try what they asked us to do and then come out and fix it afterwards, because we meet every year. We talk about that all the time. We meet every year so we can always fix things that aren't working.
Say we enter a recession in 2024, how would you respond to that? More federal spending definitely helped us get out of a recession for the pandemic, but it left, it left higher inflation. That's a problem. Would you support more spending through tax increases at the federal level or with more debt? Or would you rather just, not touch it and just let federal spending continue its course?
This is a very hard question. And, right now, I think globally, we are in a very precarious situation. We think about what's happening in Israel and Palestine and then Ukraine and Russia, and then also China and Taiwan. And right now, it's like, when your house is burning down, do you start worrying about your water bill? And no, you have to take care of an emergency. I have a good friend, and he's like, he was working on a Sunday one day, and I'm like, Nick, what are you doing? He's like, when your ox is in the mud, sometimes you just got to get it out. And I said, all right. So I think that's kind of where we're at right now. We have a lot of work to do. There's a lot of problems that are happening globally. And for us to start cutting back drastically would not create a better situation globally. I think some of the money that we can spend is trying to create a government government and an economy that's more self-sufficient. And I think the CHIPS Act helps with that. I think the infrastructure bill, even though it's cost money, it actually brings really good jobs, and it brings the infrastructure we need to improve some of the things in our communities. I mean, hearing about a bridge falling down is just devastating. So, right now, we're in a precarious situation, and I think we do need to control spending, but I don't believe right now is the best time for us to make drastic moves. We do have tax cuts that were put into place that are going to be sunsetting in 2025, and I think those should sunset. I think that the discrepancy between those at the highest level of earning and those at the lowest level of earning, their tax burden is drastically different. But I think all Americans should be carrying an equal burden to solve this problem. It's a terrible place to be in. We cannot keep going at the rate we're in, but right now is not the time for us to start cinching our belt. I'm sorry. I just can't see with what's happening around the globe is not the right time.
Boy, I think that debate's going to get a lot of airtime come end of 2025, right? Every state's affected by it.
I support sunsetting them. They did not help the middle class at all.
The president of the Utah Foundation thinks that housing affordability might be at the top of the list of the 2024 Utah Priorities Project. What, if anything, can you and Congress do about this issue? What does housing affordability mean to you? Does it mean home ownership or being able to afford rent? What does it mean?
Housing affordability means all of those things to me. I live in a community that we have two houses, one house that's for rent in our community, and now we found another person is going to start renting their house. It kind of hurts my heart to hear that we're going to have more rentals in my community, and there's eroding the sense of community in my neighborhood. So I'm looking at it as a personal level, but I'm expanding it outwards to Utahns. I don't think that we should forsake the Utahns that have lived here and donated their time and money and energy and, you know, hold out a shiny carrot for somebody to come here. You know, I think that the people that have worked years to build these communities we should have loyalty to them, where they shouldn't have to have 7 or 8 rental houses all around them, whether they're Airbnbs or whether they're just second homes that are being rented to friends or families or on Airbnbs or in a rental pool. So I think there's a rental problem that we're dealing with. And I think, like, you know, second home ownership, I know that we have a different tax structure if it's not your primary residence. But if you can own 5 or 6 homes, I think there should be a different tax structure for each additional home that you're taking out of the market. So when you support rentals at a higher rate than you support ownership, it creates a lopsided market, you know. The hard part is, you know, Representative Carol Spackman Moss was talking about when her husband and her got a divorce years ago, that house was her lifeline. And when you think about your house and being able to get a second mortgage on it, and it's this rock that you have that you can return to, that you can draw from, that you can bring people into, we are creating a lot of trauma in our community because people don't have that lifeline. They don't have that rock that they are attached to. And so for me, it's not even just a financial thing. It's the erosion of our communities, not knowing your neighbors, not knowing, you know, when I was a kid and I, you know, got into a little trouble, somebody come out and they say, "Is that Kathleen Reamy? I'm going to call your mother," you know, and there's something to be said for that, you know. And so as we start to look at these policies that break us down and don't make us connected to our neighbor, we're really eroding something bigger than just the financial background. We're eroding that community sense of, I know you and you're not going to cross me, and you're going to watch out for my kids and I'm going to watch out for your kids. And when your shovel needs to be, you know, walk needs to be shoveled, you're going to step in and help out. So I think we're going to have to start looking at not just building houses to build houses to fill that need, because no matter how many we build, renters are always going to be more able to buy them than the people that are struggling to get into home ownership. So we're going to have to change how we treat those massive rental magnates that just manage land all over the place. I mean, having 3, having 4, I don't know what the magic number is, but I know it's not 100. I know it's not 1,000, where that's 1,000 houses off the market. The average stay in Park City and Deer Valley is 24 days. All those mansions up there. Can you believe that? That's hard. And when we have homeless people and people who can't afford a house, I mean, that's a lot of, when you think about the efficiency of your resources, that's not efficient at all. You know, I think my husband was saying when he went to a ski area up in Canada, you were forced to put it in the rental pool. You couldn't own it and you couldn't, you know, just sit on it. You had to have it in the rental pool, and it created a much more thriving economy to have everybody using the resources were there. And then also to diminish the sprawl we have all across Great Salt Lake City. And, you know, when we think about that sprawl, it's a detriment to our air quality, and it's a detriment to our health.
So the fourth question, do we need to do anything about air quality in Utah? And if so, is there any easy solution?
Do we need to do anything more? We need to do more. You've got the word more. We have to do more for air quality. Yeah, we do. I don't feel like we should be moving quickly in one direction. I think that our energy solutions should be braided, and we should look to lots of solutions so that we can have a more resilient economy. Phil Lyman and I talk about small nuclear reactors all the time that have become much more efficient. And there's a lot of research behind them now. And I would never
guess you and Phil Lyman would work on a bill together.
We are great friends. We enjoy each other's company tremendously. But I go to his caucus as often as I can. And I think that I'm willing to look in any direction to come up with solutions. And I think that if you're not willing to look at everything to come up with solutions, you're misguided. For me, everything's on the table. Everything is a return on your investment for the benefit of the people of Utah. So air quality has to be a braided issue with different types of energy. We need to look at how we can get mass transit further into Tooele. Tooele has no way to get into the Salt Lake Valley except for one highway, and that really bothers them. I live in an area that if I took a train or if I wanted to take mass transit, it would probably take me a day to get anywhere because I'm so far out on the edges. I just think everything has to be on the table for air quality because it is so dire.
Boy, you're talking about another very contentious issue. I think we got time for one more question. Hey, Steve, you pick.
In terms of partisanship and division, should we be worried about those divides? And if so, what can you do about it? And is the party system a good thing?
We should be worried about it. We should be very worried about it. It's really, really problematic right now. I think shutting down the government has been a terrible, terrible disaster for the average Utah. It's a terrible thing that, you know, we hold everybody hostage by having a fight with the people across the aisle. Is the party system a good thing? No, it's not. The two-party system is not helping anyone. I made a joke with my peers in the Democratic caucus one time, and I said, hey, let's just all become Republicans. And then we'd have to caucus together. And I mean, what would they do? They'd be like, oh, don't talk loudly. Kathleen's here. You know, like, I'm on your side. We're all on the same side. We should all be on Utah's side. We should all be on America's side. And we shouldn't be winning brownie points by usurping the process that's in place. I know I personally have had my bills held and killed because I'm on the other side that were good bills. And so I find that trying to hurt a party by hurting the people is not a good thing. And I would like to see the two-party system disappear. I would like to see more independents and other parties involved. But I think maybe just getting rid of the parties completely might be the best thing to do. But I'm not sure. I don't think the current structure is helping us at all.
That's like a complete change. But I don't know. On the other hand, you know, voters use the party as a signal.
I think that if we cap the amount of money that you could raise, that would change it tremendously. I mean, cap the amount of money you can raise, and then everybody has the same amount. Shorten the amount of time that you can run. And you know what? Create everybody with the same facilities. You know, you get 3 hours of airtime, you get 4 commercials, you get 100 signs, you know, I don't know, just cap it all and say, this is what you got, make the best of it. And after that, you have to invest your own sweat energy and go meet people, knock on doors. It's your sweat equity that's going to change it, you know, but it's campaigning and campaign consultant firms. It's a cottage industry that's gone wild almost. And I would agree. It's a really hard part of politics right now that's not helping us get the best candidates, I believe.
Okay. What are your final thoughts on... what's your number one priority for Utah going forward in 1 minute?
My priority for Utah are the people of Utah. Anything that helps the people of Utah is what I'm going to vote for. If there's a bill out there that caps medicine for people in Utah, I'm going to cap medicine expenses for the people of Utah. If there's a bill out there that brings more services to veterans in Utah, I'm going to vote for that bill. I want the people in the state of Utah to feel the government support and not feel like we're an adversarial relationship. The people in our communities are the are the backbone of everything, and they mean the most to me. So my priorities are the people. And when you sit down to your dinner table, that you feel comfort, that you're, that you have some support behind you.
Thank you for your time, Senator Reby. Good luck.
Thanks, Tom.
You have been listening to Utah Thrives, the Utah Foundation podcast. To learn more about the Utah Priorities Project and what issues are most important to Utah voters, please visit utahfoundation.org.